Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Neil Patel, the co-founder of Crazy Egg, Hello Bar, and Kiss Metrics. Neil is considered a prolific digital marketer by anyone he's ever worked with, and throughout his career, he's helped companies like Amazon, NBC, GM, and Viacom grow their revenue through his digital marketing consulting. Neil's been named a top marketer and entrepreneur for major publications like The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and Entrepreneur Magazine. Neil also teaches various online marketing courses, co-hosts the Marketing School podcast, and somehow finds time to write New York Times best-selling business books like Hustle, Power to Change Your Life with Money, Meaning, and Momentum. In this episode, Neil and I talk about how he's built multiple successful careers, launching himself to the very top of his field as a digital marketing consultant, the co-founder of multiple SaaS startups in his industry, an author, online educator, and more. We dive into his own personal sales process, including the tactics, strategies, and techniques that have helped him land some of his most important deals over the years. We cover his process for selling to high-value, large B2B companies, what it's taken to scale his sales teams, how he navigates negotiating with prospects, the best business investment he's ever made, and more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Neil Patel. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So Neil, you've got a ton of experience both in running a service-based consulting business and in building widely used SaaS products over the years. Which have you found to be more challenging?
SaaS. It's easier for me to grow consulting because I'm known for it, but they're probably both just as equally hard. It's just consulting's easier for me because I got my career started in consulting, so everyone knows me for it.
Even going back to, say, like the early days then of going into consulting, what do you feel like was the most challenging aspect of that then?
Yeah, sure. During the early days of consulting, the most challenging aspect would be trying to get new customers and sales. Yeah. Everyone believes that you just create a business and then boom, you're there. Or you build a brand and boom, you have customers. None of that really happens. Even if you have traffic and leads, doesn't mean you're going to close.
Yeah. And so before you have like, you know, obviously now you've got this personal brand that helps you out significantly. What kind of like value propositions would you lean on to convince someone to, you know, give you the confidence and the trust to actually hire you?
Yeah. So when it comes to confidence and trust, what I found is like, it's not even confidence and trust, right? To be quite frank, it's like, people are either going to hire you or they're not. And for each person, it's different. Some people are looking for someone who's not going to screw them over. Some people are looking for someone who seems like they know what they're talking about. Some people are looking for someone who has a proven track record. You got to figure out what each customer is looking for and appeal to that, right? Even if you build up the rapport, you have the brand, if you don't fit in to what people are looking for, you're usually not going to get hired. And that's why before you sell anyone on anything, the first thing you need to figure out is what do they really want? If you don't really figure out what they want, it doesn't mean you're going to fit. Now, let me give you a broad example. Let's say I'm selling consulting. Well, if I'm selling consulting, someone could end up saying, hey, we want you to come in and do everything. Someone could also come in and say, hey, we already are great at most things, but we suck at this. We want you to do this one thing only. Or they could be like, hey, we've missed our numbers. We need you to come and fix it and hit our numbers. Can you hit up? Right? And with that pitch, if you don't talk about how you can hit their quarterly numbers or yearly numbers, you're not going to get hired. Or it could be, we already have everyone internally. We just want you to train our staff on where we're missing a few gaps. Right? And if you go with the same generic pitch, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're me, you're Gary Vaynerchuk, you're Tim Ferriss, you're Seth Godin, you're Guy Kawasaki. It doesn't matter how big your brand is. You're not going to close the deal unless you fit what the client is looking for. Sure, every once in a while, you may win some deals because you can smooth talk your way in or they can't find anyone anyone else. But in most cases, you're going to lose the deal unless you can provide the solution that they're looking for. And the same goes with SaaS. In SaaS, let's say you offer a CRM and you're a CRM company. Like I believe you guys have CRM at close.io, right? So you guys have a CRM, you guys are selling it. Someone could be like, oh, we need a CRM that works really well for a 1,000-person sales company. And I know Close is amazing, but I don't know if it's built for 1,000 or 2,000 people sales teams, right? And same with the HubSpot. They could be like, all right, yeah, HubSpot's amazing, could have all our features. Same with Close, you could have all the features. And you could work with 2,000 people. But what happens if you don't do integrations with their 15-year-old softwares that they're still on? You're not going to get the accounts, right? You need to make sure you fit in with what the customer is looking for. And you're not always going to be, and that's okay.
Yeah. So what do you feel then has been the most important deal you've ever been a part of closing? And this could be with consulting, it could be with one of your SaaS businesses, anything.
Yeah, I've never had one important deal. I've had quite a few deals that are important or big or that can change the trajectory of the business. But yeah, what I've always learned from them is sales isn't about you just going and selling. It's more so about listening and figuring out what they really need, their pain points, and figuring out how you can fit in and make their lives easier.
Okay, so how about then with growing sales teams beyond just what you're doing personally? So I imagine, like, obviously in the early days with, you know, KISS Metrics, tools like that, you're doing a lot of sort of the outreach and building relationships with potential clients yourself. So how do you then start scaling beyond just your own efforts? What do you look for in those first few people you bring on?
So anytime I'm trying to scale beyond my efforts, I first have to figure it out on my own. I don't care if you're branded or not well branded or experienced or not. Don't just hire someone in sales and expect them to figure it out. You got to first figure out the process, the objections, the issues people are going to have. I'm not saying you have to start closing tons of deals. You just have to figure out what issues potential reps are going to have. And then when you hire that person, ideally someone who's hungry, you ideally want to hire two people so they can compete against each other. You want to break down, you know, any problems they have and help them solve them. And you just want to help them fine tune the process, but you got to be involved in the beginning. Ideally, you just want someone who is fast, iterates, is scrappy, and can just do whatever it takes to succeed and isn't demotivated, right? Ideally is optimistic, can learn from their mistakes. One of the big qualities I look for is someone who's trainable. If they're not trainable, it doesn't really work out. I make sure they're also a cultural fit. Some people are really aggressive on the phone, which isn't a cultural fit for us. So those are some of the things that we look at.
Yeah. And so with KISS Metrics in particular, you guys have been able to attract customers like Outbrain, SendGrid, Lucidchart, like some really big recognizable names. Do you remember who your first major client was with KISS Metrics?
There was a few. Hulu, Spotify, NBC. We had quite a few large companies during the early days. I bet most of them churned, sadly, but that's the reality. These new accounts, I don't know who they closed or who closed them because I haven't been part of KISS for years. We did sales wrong at KISS. We hired a VP of sales. My co-founder and I didn't take the time to learn sales ourselves, create the process, and then go from there. And if you look at the numbers have always been stagnant, and I think that's why. Because a sales rep, and I'm not trying to knock sales reps, they typically go and they sell. They don't really tell you how to fix a process or what's wrong. You got to try it out for them. They're great at selling. They usually suck at everything else. I'm not saying they're dumb. They just suck at everything else. For example, with my sales guys, they're like, yeah, our leads suck. Well, you're getting a lot of them. What's wrong? Oh, they don't get on the phone. Well, all right, let's integrate with schedule once. And then when the lead comes in, let them schedule right then and there. Oh, the leads are great now. They're all getting on the phone and talking, right? Like, you hear excuses from the reps, but they never tell you the real solutions unless you're involved. And they, in most cases, what I found is don't know how to come up with the solutions. Like, I've had reps tell me, like, yeah, we lost a lot of deals because we didn't have case studies. Well, why didn't you say something or ask us for case studies? Right? They're usually not that vocal. And even if you create a culture where every, you know, Friday you meet up and you guys discuss issues or even every morning, they still don't really tell you what problems you face. I've been through probably like 50, 60 sales reps. I've hired SVPs from like places like, places where they're getting like $400,000 or $500,000, $700,000. What was the last guy I got? He was from an email company, ReturnPath, right? You're talking about $500,000 a year person to run a division. You would assume they know all this stuff, right? They usually don't know any of these things. They're good at selling. And even then, I feel when you hire people who are too hype, they're lazy. Like, I would just listen to recorded calls, and I'm like, all right, here's your discovery call, here's your pitch call, here's your closing call, whatever it is. And I'll just break down what's wrong. VPs of sales and all these people, they say they do this stuff. They don't really do it in mass scale. Or you end up talking to people and these sales reps are like, yeah, a lot of our leads aren't qualified. You know, we're doing our pitch. When we do our pitch, they say they can't afford it. I'm like, well, you had a discovery call. If you know, you didn't get the price out of them then that's your bad. And they're like, no, you know, I said this is where our pricing starts at. And I listened to the calls that they do, but they don't reinforce it. And when I was on it and I did a few discovery calls with the team and I'm like, look, here's our price. Here's how much it starts at per month. This is why it starts here. This is what you get. And we can go more into that, assuming we're both a good fit. And require a 12-month contract. And we got to make sure we're both a good fit for each other. Because if you want to cancel within those 12 months, we're not going to let you. Because we don't make our money back until, let's say, after month six. Mm-hmm. And then once they started emphasizing those kind of things on the discovery calls, they stopped getting the objection of when they're doing the pitch. That like, oh, yeah, we can't afford this. It's too expensive. But sales guys don't get into the nitty gritty. And I even found when you hire like VPs and they're supposed to listen and do all this stuff, a lot of them are lazy because they're just on their high cushy job. They don't want to be doing the groundwork. I hate hiring VP of sales and stuff like that. I'm looking for people who are just like, oh, there's 5 calls today. I'm picking or I'm listening to each and every single 5 call and then giving them feedback and critiquing. That is really the best way to improve. But no one really does that stuff and everyone knows about it. But like, I've been in startups, I've been in large companies, and I call bullshit when people are like, yeah, we do this all the time. Oh yeah, there was 100 calls today and you only listened to one? Whoop-dee-doo. If you're not listening to at least one call a day per rep, you don't know what's going on. You don't know how to help them improve.
Who's been the most impressive salesperson you've ever met?
I haven't met one person who's been just like amazing, right? And I know there's amazing salespeople like the Mark Roberge from Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever. There's probably someone like that at Salesforce and Microsoft. But here's what I've learned. I've heard key players who are supposedly these amazing guys who've helped build companies to like $100 million a year. There's a few things people forget to know. One is a lot of times things just fell into place. So it helped them get to where they are. For example, right timing, right place, amazing software. Now, I'm not trying to say they didn't do a good job. I'm just saying a lot of things came into play for it all to happen for them to hit those numbers. And when you take a lot of these guys and you apply them to most businesses, they're not able to replicate the process. So for example, one of HubSpot's big successes is they had tons of inbound leads. Now, they do have a small outbound team. It may have grown and become a bit smaller than that now. But I kid you not, you take all their processes and stuff like that and you take away the lead volume, hey, you're not going to have these all-star salespeople producing the same volume. Even the SVPs or the CROs or whatever you want to end up calling them, or it just doesn't matter, right? You got to produce roughly the same environment for them to be still successful. And then you take some other people who are just hunters and they do amazingly well in those old school environments where the softwares are clunky and bulky and they have all the right integration. You give them a new edge solution and they just suck at it, right? Even when you give them inbound leads. Certain people are just good at certain types of selling with certain types of products and market conditions and business conditions. And you know what? Like, just because someone's an all-star in one business in the same role doesn't mean they're going to be an all-star in your business. But you can learn from everyone. I try taking tips from everyone. Stelly says, hey, call everyone in 5 minutes, or is it 15 minutes? It's something like that, right? And he was breaking down some stats. Stelly's an amazing sales guy, right? I think you guys have a whole team that just sells for other people or something like that. But you know what? If Stelly was selling my product, I bet you can I can outsell him. Not because I'm better at sales. I just know my product or service better, right? The point I'm trying to make is just because I'm better doesn't mean I can't learn from him. And just because he's better at selling, even if you hire him, doesn't mean he's going to produce more for your own business. What I'm getting at is if it's your company, you need to put in the time and effort to improve your sales team. By all means, you can hire the Stellies of the world or the Mark Roberge, make him an advisor, or whoever you want to do or whatever strategy you want to leverage. But you got to do a bit of a combination of everything to fine tune. There is no one place or one source who's going to like solve your sales problems.
Now, one thing you mentioned earlier is the power of case studies, right? So whether you're a founder going out and shopping out your product, or you have sales teams that are spending their time pitching case studies and trying to land deals for you, like obviously the case study is really, really important. What do you think?
My team thinks this is important, but I call bullshit on that.
Why is that?
I change my discovery script. I'll be like, oh, how much do you guys know about us? Yada, yada. And for the people who don't, I'll show them like some quick testimonials and stuff. And I'm like, I have dozens of case studies, but let's be honest, all these testimonials and these case studies are bullshit. Just because I did well for these other companies doesn't mean I can do well for your business. And we need to first dive in and figure out what you're trying to do. And then let's actually see if we can help. And I even tell them like, yeah, everyone touts their case studies, but you know, everyone has them. And anytime someone gives you a reference, they're only giving you a reference of someone who is happy. When does everyone ever give you a reference of someone who's an unhappy customer, right? And I'm like, for that reason, it really is all bullshit. The real question is, what can I do for you? And we start framing things like that. You don't get people saying like, hey, give me tons of case studies and references or anything.
I like that. Do you have any negotiations that come to mind in your past that have been particularly difficult?
No, because I don't negotiate in sales. So explain. I say, here's my price. Here's why we charge this much. If you want to do it internally, here's how many employees you would have to hire. Here's your cost. And because we do this at mass scale, this is why it's cheaper. And here's the thing. We have X thousand or whatever leads who hit us up, and we pick the ones that we know we can work with or are a good fit. If this isn't a good fit for you or the price doesn't work out, no worries. You know, like, don't do it. No one should ever pressure you to do something you're not comfortable with. You can always come back to us when you're ready. And, you know, I make sure when they're a bit hesitant, I say, you know what I want you to do? For the next 2 days, I want you to think about this. Think about if we're really a good fit for you, and I'll shoot you an email. And if you think we're really a good fit, because remember, we're going to be in bed with each other. We're pretty much going to be married for 12 months, and neither of us can get out even if we're miserable. So I want you to take a few days to think about if we're even a good fit for you, and you're willing to make that kind of commitment. If there's even a 1% doubt in your mind, don't do it. And I'll email you in a few days and you tell me if there's any doubt. And if there isn't, then we'll get into your business. We'll dive into the numbers and figure out where our software or service or whatever it may be, what it can do for you. And then I get all the tire kickers out right away at the beginning. Then my sales team is only focusing on the people that are truly interested. Yes, they have less people to close. But when they spend more time on them, better presentations, everything's more thought out, potential clients are happier, and you notice the close rates go up.
All right, Neil, well, this is my last question for you. What's been the best investment you've ever made in the context of building your selling skills?
The best thing I've ever done is listening to recorded calls. You listen to recorded calls and you do role playing. And you don't do this once a week, once a month. I don't care if someone's been selling for 5 years or they've been with you for 6 months. We do this literally every single day with every single salesperson on our team. That's the reason our guys close so well. It's bullshit to say, here's a script. It's bullshit to say, oh yeah, you're already good to go, because you're always going to get edge cases. And unless you're there and role playing with people, they're going to screw up. So you have to listen to recorded calls. You have to have them admit where they screwed up, get them to understand why, role play to get them better, and then listen to future calls to see if they fixed it. Because the chances are they're still going to make that same error over and over again, and you literally have to beat it out of them and break that bad habit, and eventually they'll get out of that bad habit, and then they'll do well. See, most people believe like, oh, I just need X amount of amazing sales guys. Well, you're not going to hire the LeBron James of sales. If you do, he's going to leave. What are you going to do? Try to fight for the next LeBron James? You're much better hiring normal, average sales guys and creating an amazing process and training them to be, you know, maybe close to an all-star player, but they didn't get into the all-stars. And that's okay, because it's much more scalable and predictable. You can hire way more of them. Your business is going to have much more consistent growth compared to you relying on the LeBron James. A LeBron James can't build a $100 million company. You still need a lot of B players, and they're okay. I'd rather hire tons of B players than an A player in sales. And as long as the B players are trainable and you have an amazing process, you can get them up.
I love that. All right, well, that's a great point to end on. Neil, can you tell everyone viewing today where they can go to learn more about you and everything you're up to?
NeilPatel.com.
Awesome. All right, thanks for having us.
Take care.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of The Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.